Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the epidemic of underage sexual escort services to the rich and the powerful. My guest, Nick Bryant, a top investigative reporter who's been writing on the plight of disadvantaged children for over a decade. His writings have appeared in professional publications, peer-reviewed journals such as the Journal of Professional Ethics, the Journal of Applied Developmental Psychology, the Journal of Social Distress, and the publication of School Health. He is a co-author of America's Children, Triumph of Tragedy, that dealt with the mental health problems of lower socioeconomic children. He is the author of The Franklin Scandal, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal that exposes a nationwide pedophile ring that pandered children to a cabal of the rich and powerful and the corruption of the Justice Department under multiple presidential administrations and law enforcement to crack down on it. It is perhaps one of the most suppressed crime stories in recent American history. He is also co-author of the forthcoming Confessions of a D.C. Madam, co-written with Henry Vinson, who at one time was the head gay pimp for the Washington elite. His website is franklinscandal.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Glad to be with you, Gary.
I'm concerned about a lot of things that are happening right now, but I guess when you're ahead of the curve, you're not going to be given much attention, and you have been ahead of the curve. Let's put this in perspective and why I feel this is important. It's not about a salacious story. It's not about embarrassing a celebrity. That is really irrelevant to me. Rather, it is about those in power, seemingly untouchable, who one day something stops them. We our attention is drawn to them. And there have been two important incidences that have brought the problem of pedophilia back into the media. The first has been the legal accusations of a woman who was pimped out when she was underage by billionaire and one of the most politically connected individuals in America, Jeffrey Epstein. And one of the persons that was this woman was pimped out to was the Prince Andrew of England, fifth in line to the crown, and the international legal scholar at Harvard and close associate of Larry Summers, Alan Dershowitz. Now, based upon your analysis of Epstein's black book of addresses and the flight logs of his private jet, Epstein's network of women to serve his elite clientele was extensive and operated in several cities, including London and Paris. The black book is believed to outline the extent of Epstein's adult and child sex network. And since not all the girls working for him were underage, that's an issue that has to be addressed. And other individuals who appear in the book include Donald Trump, former Prime Minister of Israel, Barak, former governors of New Mexico, plus Ted Kennedy, David Koch, and others. I'm not putting into this discussion that because someone appeared in his black book or was on his airplane or was at his island that they necessarily engaged in these activities. We're going to get to that a little later. However, we should be clear that these entries in no way suggest that there were actual clients for sexual favors. Nevertheless, the list of names of women is extensive. Now, the second important incident is that Scotland Yard has reopened the Elm Guest House child sex abuse scandal, which was a Westminster pedophile ring involving leading ministers and members of parliament in the British government, judges, pop stars, and others with links to the royal family. In this case, the ring led to several murders in order to protect highly positioned individuals. It's a kind of the British equivalent of the Franklin scandals in the U.S., which you have investigated and spoken about before. So here we have a major sex scandal in the United States going on for a long period of time, covered up. Even when Epstein was found guilty, the people who were helping him get a minimal sentence and then how they kept everyone else associated from ever being prosecuted by indemnifying them. Now, in England, I heard about this sex scandal members of the British Parliament and high judges and everyone else being involved in a pedophile scandal. But at that time, the media wouldn't touch it. They said, oh, this is nonsense. These are just wild conspiratorial accusations. Now, after over 20 years, Scotland Yard, I was just listening to the BBC, and Scotland Yard has confirmed that there is enough credible evidence that they're opening a full investigation, but also they had started a previous investigation on politicians, including the Home Secretary, who just died on Friday, would block it. So both countries, major sexual scandals. And I want to see what they have in common. I want to see why, if you and I ever stoop to such a depth that we would engage in under-sex activity, we would be pillared, we would spend a long time in prison, and forever be marked and branded as a pedophile. Why is it there's a separate set of standards for the rich and powerful, how they protect themselves? So begin by sharing some of the darker secrets you have uncovered during your award-winning investigative reporting career, and especially over the last 2 years when no one else was paying attention. You looked into the activities of the sex network of Jeffrey Epstein. How extensive was Epstein's network of underage girls? The youngest, I understand, was 12 years old. And also, how many women besides Virginia Roberts who have filed court charges in relation to Epstein's demands for her to have sex with powerful elite men have come forward with their own stories? So take your time, lay out the case.
Well, I started, as you know, I wrote a book called The Franklin Scandal that was published in 2009, where I looked at a power broker pedophile network that was operating throughout the United States, and it was, the epicenter of it was in Omaha, Nebraska, and kids from the Midwest were being flown to the East Coast and to the West Coast, and particularly to Washington, D.C., where they would have sex with power brokers, politicians, captains of industry, and ultimately there was a house where a lot of these pedophilic parties occurred, and ultimately if any of these power brokers engaged in any illicit activity at this particular house, they would certainly be blackmailed, because it was word fraud, it was blackmail. And I researched that story for 7 years, and because that's the Franklin scandal is very similar to the Epstein scandal and also to the Jimmy Savile scandal in the respect that, if I'm just going to stick with American jurisprudence, with both the Franklin scandal and then the Epstein scandal, you had very corrupt state grand juries. And, for example, in the Franklin scandal, I actually acquired the sealed testimony of a grand jury, and I had a chapter on just how corrupt that grand jury was. In that grand jury, and that I talk about in the Franklin scandal, it didn't indict any of the perpetrators. It indicted the children who were making allegations about the perpetrators. It indicted the victims of the perpetrators for perjury. Now, with the Epstein case, it's a little different because there was a state grand jury. The Palm Beach Police Department had five victims on record, underage victims on record of Jeffrey Epstein's, but they knew of many more. Jeffrey Epstein had a little factory where he was getting young girls all over. And the Palm Beach Police Department, to their credit, investigated this for a year. I mean, they were meticulous in their investigation. And they outright wanted to indict Epstein on five counts, four counts of sex with underage girls, and one count of lewd and lascivious molestation. But the state attorney decided that it would go to a grand jury. And a lot of people don't really understand grand juries. A grand jury, a special prosecutor is appointed as a person is appointed to be a special prosecutor of a grand jury, and he chooses the evidence and also the witnesses that the grand jurors hear from. And grand jurors are just basically good citizens who have shown up for jury duty and been funneled into a grand jury. And so special prosecutors have an unbelievable amount of power because they decide what exactly what evidence is shown to the grand jurors, and they decide exactly what witnesses are called. So they can easily twist grand jurors' decisions. And actually, there's a famous quote about grand jurors by a New York appellate judge who said that special prosecutors have so much power over grand jurors that they could get them to indict a ham sandwich. So although the Palm Beach Police Department had amassed all this evidence, they had five victims come forward and give sworn statements, and then they had a number of other witnesses to this, and they knew of additional victims too. So that grand jury indicted Epstein on one count of adult solicitation of prostitution, which carried 5 years. And in the Franklin scandal, the book that I wrote, that grand jury, as I said before, didn't indict any of the perpetrators. It just indicted the victims that would recant their abuse on perjury charges. So these two stories have a parallel concerning you have very corrupt state grand juries. And what happened there, again, is in the Franklin scandal, you primarily have Republicans molesting little boys. And in the Epstein scandal, you primarily have Democrats molesting little girls. That seems to be the demographic. I mean, that there are always rules to the exception, but that seems to be the demographic. And with the Franklin scandal, those allegations went to also a federal grand jury. And the federal grand jury basically said what the state grand jury said. In my book, I also show what a travesty the federal grand jury was. Now, in the Epstein case, there was so much outrage over the state grand jury only indicting Epstein on one count of adult solicitation when the Palm Beach Police Department knew that he was a serial pedophile. So there was a tremendous amount of outrage. So the feds came in, the Department of Justice, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida came in, and they impaneled a grand jury and they started issuing subpoenas. But what happened there was Dershowitz, Roy Black, and Epstein's dream team of attorneys, they went to work on the victim's credibility. Dershowitz really went to work on the victim's credibility. And Dershowitz also went to work on the credibility of the Palm Beach Police Department. So, and then Team Epstein went to work. They started investigating the federal prosecutors in Miami. I mean, and this is where it gets kind of mind-boggling, that the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, I mean, Team Epstein started to investigate those investigators and investigate their family members. I mean, it gets kind of mind-boggling. And then they had people in Washington, D.C., at Main Justice, start pressuring the people at that U.S. Attorney's office, the prosecutors at that U.S. Attorney's office, to go soft on Epstein. So what ultimately happened was Epstein pled guilty to one count of adult solicitation in the state. This is what the feds required Epstein to do. The feds required Epstein to plead guilty to one count of adult solicitation and one count of procuring minors. So he was potentially looking at 20 years because the procuring minors for unlawful sexual activity carried a 15-year sentence, a maximum 15-year sentence. So Epstein was potentially looking at 20 years in prison, but the feds and the state worked it out where Epstein would serve 18 months in a county jail. And ultimately, he served 13 months in a county jail, and he was allowed to leave during the day. And the feds knew that this agreement was really, really just a complete miscarriage of justice. And so they sealed it. They didn't want anybody to know about it. And a number of Epstein's victims have lawyered up at this point. I mean, Epstein has settled over 30 molestation lawsuits at this point. So a number of these underage girls had lawyered up, and the Palm Beach Post also wanted to know what that plea bargain was. And so there was a lot of adjudication, but it was ultimately unsealed against the vehement objections of Epstein's legal team. And it was the deal that I just told you, that Epstein and actually the feds were well aware that minors had been transported across state lines, and they had a list of like 35 minors that Epstein had. And I'm writing a third article for Gawker. I've written two articles on Gawker. The first one was about the flights, and the second one's about the Black Book. The third one is going to be about the federal malfeasance. But the feds actually had a list of like 35 Epstein victims, and yet they still made that deal with Epstein, where he had to plead guilty to one count of procuring minors.
Okay, let's take a break here for a moment and look at this. What we're looking at is four cases. We're looking at the current one in the news about billionaire Jeffrey Epstein's network of younger girls hired out to wealthy and powerful, including what we have been told is Prince Andrew. Then we have the Westminster pedophile ring, now being probed by Scotland Yard. Then we have your original investigation of the Franklin scandal, which you say was a miscarriage of justice, because when the witnesses, the children, came forward with the stories of how they had been abused, sexually abused, by these powerful Republicans in Washington, not only were none of those people found culpable, but then the children themselves were charged with crimes for perjury.
Were charged with perjury, yes.
And then you also have the case of the Washington Gay Escort Service run by Henry Vinson to top clients, many of George W. Bush's people and VIPs, business execs, and socialite, which also included the GOP's top lobbyist, who figured prominently in the Franklin scandal as well. So we have four different major scandals involving powerful people. One of those is not about underage, and therefore it's with consenting adults, but the others are all about underage. Let's get very specific to show you the crimes against these young people. Take us through the Franklin scandal in detail. I realize you've been on this many times, but now this information is very relevant. It's a time bomb waiting to detonate, because many of those very powerful people are still in powerful positions in Washington, D.C., in every area of government. Some have retired, but the victims have never been given their day. Tell us about how they did it, who was involved, and what the crimes were against the children.
Well, with the Franklin scandal, it was a pedophile network, a power broker pedophile network that was in existence for about 10 years. And its epicenter, as I said earlier, was Omaha, Nebraska. And the pimp in the pedophilic pimp in Omaha, his name was Lawrence E. King. And he would get kids throughout the Midwest and throughout Nebraska, but he plundered Boys Town, the esteemed Catholic orphanage, which is outside of Omaha, Nebraska. And he flew these kids around for 10 years and pandered them to his rich and powerful cronies, mostly in the Republican Party, and most of them were boys. There were some girls, but most of the kids that were pandered were boys. And ultimately, a state Senate subcommittee started to look into his crimes. And because federal and state law enforcement, social services had alerted law enforcement about Lawrence King running a pedophile network, but they were just completely ignored. And finally, the social services personnel got the ears of Nebraska senators, and they formed the subcommittee, and then they looked into these allegations. And there was a tremendous amount of power that was deployed to cover this up. I mean, the Senate subcommittee's lead investigator died under very mysterious circumstances, as did the siblings of some of the victims who were having problems who didn't want to recant their abuse. So ultimately, and then you had the grand jury come in and say that there was no abuse. They called.
Okay, I need you to follow my direction here, Nick, okay?
Okay.
All right, this is not a lecture. This is an interview. So please, just if you could, you're skipping all over the place. I need a story. So if you would be kind enough to answer my specific questions, it would paint a different picture than what you're doing. You're doing great broad overstrokes. I need details. For example, let's go through it. One, where did they get these children and who got them?
Lawrence E. King had a mechanism for getting children, and as I said earlier, a lot of these kids were taken from Boys Town, the esteemed Catholic orphanage. A number of the kids were runaways that had fallen through the cracks, and a number of the kids were from dysfunctional families.
Let's go back a moment. Boys Town, which is that's the famous movie Boys Town with Spencer Tracy and Mickey Rooney. That's run by and owned by the Catholic Church. Can we assume that the Catholic the elders, the priests, someone would have known about this?
Oh, absolutely.
So they were participating in pedophilia ring.
Yes. I really delineate that because Boys Town is probably the most famous Catholic orphanage in the world, if not. Boys Town is, there's been three movies made about Boys Town, and absolutely Boys Town was participating in Lawrence King being able to plunder its students for his sex network, for his pedophilic network.
What method did he use? I mean, you just don't walk up to a door and say, I want these 10 young boys to fly with me to have sex with someone in Washington. What was the modus operandi they used?
These kids came from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, much like Jeffrey Epstein's kids. Most of the kids that Jeffrey Epstein exploited came from lower socioeconomic backgrounds and dysfunctional families. So there's a common denominator there. And with Jimmy Savile's kids, the children that Jimmy Savile abused in England, a lot of those kids were from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. The mechanism that King used, there was a pedophile named Father James Kelly, who was the number two person at Boys Town. He was the quote-unquote spiritual advisor or something like that, but he was the number two man. And it's my belief that he enabled Lawrence King to plunder. Now, getting the kids was relatively easy because these kids come from very poor backgrounds, and if you offer them $50 or $100, it seems like all the money in the world to them. So it was quite easy for Lawrence King to plunder Boys Town, given that the kids come from such disadvantaged backgrounds, and that the number two person at Boys Town at that point was an inveterate pedophile.
Okay, so there was a deal with the second most powerful person, and the pimp who got these. How many kids did he take at a time? Where did they take him, and what happened to them?
I've talked to a number of the kids, and they're in my book. Lawrence King flew them all over the country. He took these kids all over the country. And a lot of them were, and a lot of these kids were really subjected to very sadistic abuse. But they were flown all over the country. They were pornographic pictures were taken of them. They were quite heavily abused. It's a very sad thing.
How many kids are we talking about?
Over the course of those years, I do not know. I found a number of the Boys Town kids who participated in the network, and I would say that Boys Town was a major provider of children for this pedophile network. I have no idea of, like, how many there were. the special investigator who died under mysterious circumstances had a list of approximately 60 victims, and 10 of them were Boys Town.
All right, graduates. So they, let's just say that they would go to Washington, D.C., because they did go to Washington, D.C.
They did.
Who would they meet there? Did you get the names of the people who were the pedophiles?
These kids really didn't know. I mean, we're talking kids that are from very lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and these kids knew that they were with powerful men. But they did not know exactly who they were with. They just knew that they were with very powerful men just by how they looked and their demeanor. But they had no idea of who these men were.
Do you have any way of seeing who these people were? Because they should be exposed. They should be outed.
Well, here's where it gets to be troubling. I mean, because there was so much power that was used to deployed to cover this up, it's really difficult. I mean, some names of some big-time politicians have come up in my investigation, as with my Jeffrey Epstein investigation also. But it's really difficult to name names because you've got dysfunctional kids, and you know, once these kids were heavily sexually abused, one of the carrots that they got was drugs. They got drugs and money for performing, and ultimately most of these kids were turned into drug addicts, and then they were expunged by the network when they lost their youthful marketability. So they went on to become drug addicts and commit crimes and end up in prison. And that's one of the problems here. It's very easy to deconstruct these victims' credibility because of not only their dysfunctional background, but because they come out of that type of scenario so scrambled.
Okay, but let's use some common sense here. There would not be an ability for a street or for anyone to intervene at the national level to prevent or downgrade a major sexual pedophile investigation unless you were more powerful than the people that you were pressuring. So power always comes from the top down. So if you are a let's say a federal prosecutor, a state prosecutor, an attorney general, there's always someone more powerful than yourself. Now, they may not have ability to compromise your ethics, but if you can be compromised in that system, they will know your weakness and they will pressure you to compromise. You're telling us that in multiple cases, including the Franklin scandal, where Republican powerful people around the country were using all of these unfortunate kids for their own sexual sickness, you're saying that the same thing with Jeffrey Epstein, who was convicted, but he was protected at every level. To protect a Jeffrey Epstein at that level, you're going to have someone who is as powerful as they get in order to stop him from going to jail for life.
Well,
tell us what you discovered about Jeffrey Epstein and the people who were likely to have intervened on his behalf. So if someone's intervening on a pedophile's behalf, and they're not themselves a pedophile or they're not themselves in any way compromised, I don't see someone doing that. I see only someone who themselves can be blackmailed, someone must have something on. And then you realize, if I let this guy go and he sings, he talks, he's going to bring me into it. That's just my own speculative sense of how things went down with Epstein and those others. You tell me where I'm wrong on this.
Well, I think you're right. And actually, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Miami came out, I mean, with an almost apologetic letter years after he left that office. And he said that there was heat from Washington, quote-unquote Washington. And also, and as I said earlier...
Again, stop for a moment. There was heat from Washington. Well, someone working in the Justice Department where this would have been developed, if you're just a regular person in the Justice Department, you can't intervene and stop something from happening. You don't have that authority, nor will you have the mindset, because you're not going to take the fall for if anything goes wrong. So we're talking about only policymakers have the power to intervene at the national level and stop something. Let's be clear about this.
Well, I would say that, I mean, that was certainly the case with the Franklin scandal, that the people that were intervening there were at the pinnacle of the Department of Justice. And I would, given what happened in the Epstein case, because that U.S. attorney had a list of 35 victims or so, and ultimately the deal that was made with Epstein, I'd have to extrapolate that was the intervention was at the pinnacle of the Department of Justice, too.
Okay. Now, I want to get into this a little deeper. The flight logs for Epstein's private jets puts Bill Clinton and Harvard Law scholar Alan Dershowitz individually.
And Larry Summers and the Clinton Treasury Secretary Larry Summers and the former president of Columbia, too.
Okay. But they're all on these flights on many occasions and frequently, and here's where it gets a little challenging. They're on flights with either one or both of the lead women who served as Epstein's primary pimps, Sarah Kellen and the daughter of the media magnate, Robert Maxwell, and an unknown woman entered into logs by first name only. Now, while these logs do not constitute wrongdoing, they do reveal Clinton's and Dershowitz's very close relationship with Epstein. In the case of Dershowitz, he also served as a major legal advisor for Epstein when he was sentenced to just over a year in a Florida jail for soliciting underage girls for sex. However, no charges for operating a sex ring, which he actually was doing. And it appears that Dershowitz managed to protect not only Epstein from further charges, but also some of his likely accomplices, because as we've seen from previous cases, including the Magellan case of the Wall Street insiders, when they work up the ladder, they indict lesser people to get to the top person. But when they've indicted a top person, that top person talks and just tries to get as little prison time or as reduced sentences as possible, so they always talk. You have some of the most powerful people in the world going to his private island, which, according to the testimony that we have thus far in legal briefs, was constantly an orgy with people and young girls, and his plane as well. So why in the world would people who claim they had nothing to do that was with these women and who are married and happy and all this, why would they be in this man's company? Why would they allow themselves to be put into such a compromised position? Why would they be going there when they could have done any business they had to do in an office in New York or wherever they were? Your thoughts?
Well, I think you've seen Dershowitz out. He's been a one-man victim basher. I mean, he's had quite a campaign of denials that because one of the girls did name Dershowitz as one of the perpetrators. And in the article I wrote for Gawker, I discussed that. And Dershowitz, in an interview with American Lawyer, said that he met Epstein in 2003. But I had flight logs with Dershowitz flying with Epstein in 1997. He also tried to downplay their friendship. And there's an article in Vanity Fair that was published in 2003 where it's very obvious that Jeffrey Epstein and Alan Dershowitz were friends. And Dershowitz on CNN, in his counteroffensive against the victim, Virginia Roberts, said that Virginia Roberts said that she had sex with Bill Clinton and that she had met the Queen. And Virginia Roberts has never said any of those statements. So at this point, you've got Alan Dershowitz with this smear campaign, but there's a lot of contradictory information coming from Mr. Dershowitz.
All right. Well, the fact that these women have lawyered up, and the fact that they've gone on the record and come public, in and of itself does not mean that they are guilty or they are innocent, and the ones they're challenging are guilty. All we know is that the person that we know is guilty, the man we know is a pedophile, the man we know is a sexual offender, the man we know hired people or in some way had an exchange with other women doing the pimping for him. And that is an absolute solid set of facts. What we don't know, and we will only know if this goes further and if these cases are not settled, but they get into depositions, they get into a trial, is who amongst the most powerful people in the world were culpable and guilty. And that, unless somehow the federal government, once again, who has all these what we call holdbacks, people from one administration who stay there once they're appointed, and they stay there to protect the policies of previous administrations and people. So there's a whole army of people who can interfere, block, hide, obscure, obfuscate information or investigations. These people know how to play rough. And
what's interesting about these Clinton. Four, what's interesting about these four girls that were abused by Epstein, they're not suing Epstein. They've already sued Epstein. They're suing the federal government. Because what happened is the Victim Crimes Right Act was completely trampled upon in their case. Under the Victim Crimes Rights Act, the federal prosecutors in the Epstein case were to tell the victims what was going on so the victims could have some kind of feedback concerning Epstein and his punishment. But what happened, and this is where it gets rather troubling, is that the federal prosecutors in the Epstein case, they actually lied to the victims. They told the victims they had made a deal with Epstein, that deal that I talked about where Epstein essentially got a slap on the wrist. But they did not tell the victims that Epstein had gotten a slap on the wrist. They actually told the victims that they were still negotiating with Epstein or that they were still investigating Epstein. Like 9 months after Epstein had signed his non-prosecution agreement, the lawyer representing a couple of the victims was told that it was still being investigated. So that's where it's opening up right now, is that these lawsuits aren't against Epstein. They're against the federal government and the federal government's cover-up of Epstein's crimes. And the 11th Circuit Court, which enabled this to go down, which enabled this to happen, said that because Epstein's attorneys and the Department of Justice had all these emails back and forth and communications where they were negotiating it, Epstein's non-prosecution agreement, and they lied about that. And the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, you know, made them cough up those communications, which they did. And it really shows that the victims' rights had completely been trampled on. So that's where hopefully we're going to get some movement here, is as this lawsuit proceeds against the federal government, hopefully some people are going to be able to come clean in the Department of Justice that were responsible for this deal with Epstein.
Scotland Yard has now reopened the investigation into the Westminster pedophile ring that operated during the 1970s and 80s and abused hundreds of boys. And interesting that this new investigation was followed shortly thereafter with the death of former Home Secretary Leon Brighton this month, who had been accused of multiple child rapes. And briefly summarize what is known for certain about the Elm Guest House operations, who operated it, what was the nature of its pedophile activities, and who were some of its known prominent clients, and didn't the FBI draw an association of this pedophile ring to Tony Blair's government?
Yeah, that case has been running for a while, and what you have there is very similar to the Franklin scandal and also to Epstein. You've got a number of predators at the upper echelon of government preying upon children with impunity, and it's even come out that there was a pedophile exchange network in which there were actually records that were kept of victims and also perpetrators. I mean, it gets kind of mind-boggling. And with that, too, you see multiple times where it could have been broken open, that the police were alerted to pedophilic accusations. And much like with the Epstein case, and much like with the Franklin scandal, they were simply ignored. There were kids that came forward that were ignored. There were police officers that came forward that were ignored. And it's quite mind-boggling. But this phenomena that you're talking about, that we're talking about, it's happened also in Belgium, that we know of for sure, with the Dutroux case. It's happened in Portugal. It's happened in Venezuela. It's happened in Mexico, where you have a power elite molesting children with impunity. I mean, this seems to be a reality that our country is going to have to grapple with, because it's something that people really have a lot of cognitive dissonance about, that their leaders are child molesters. They don't want to believe that their leaders are potentially child molesters. And as long as they've got that cognitive dissonance, there's going to be no resolution here. These kids are going to keep getting molested by the rich and
Nick,
the powerful
with
impunity.
Nick, was it not the fact that one of the most popular people in England for almost 40 years was one of the most serial pedophile rapist in the history of England, in the history of the whole country? And the BBC, he should have known about it, later had to apologize for it just this past year. And only now, 20, 30, 40 years after this man had been out there doing this, was he held accountable and found guilty. Is that not the case?
Yes, Jimmy Savile was.
Yeah, Jimmy Savile.
He was a predator of the First Order. Lawrence King and Jeffrey Epstein probably, believe it or not, pale in comparison to the predatory nature of Jimmy Savile. And he was also a sadist too, and to a lot of these kids, he was very depraved. And he was knighted. I mean, he was a good friend of Maggie Thatcher. And it's difficult to know in these situations. Lawrence E. King was a good friend of Ronald Reagan. And Jeffrey Epstein has all kinds of connections to the rich and the powerful. And it's really difficult to know. I mean, which of their friends are perps? I mean, and which of their friends are not? I mean, it's, what's really interesting about the Epstein case, in the second article I published in Gawker, Epstein's house manager had circled people in the black book. Your listeners can go to Gawker and they can look at the black book. And Epstein's house manager had circled people that the FBI called quote unquote material witnesses in Jeffrey Epstein's pedophile network. And Alan Dershowitz was circled, Donald Trump was circled, Peter Soros was circled, Bill Richardson was circled, actually Courtney Love was circled. And but none of these people, despite having this evidence, there wasn't an investigation into these quote-unquote material witnesses, which is truly unfortunate.
The figures I found, Nick, which were connected with an investigation known as Operation Hedgerow, recorded over 650 offenses against 150 boys. Is this accurate, or do you believe the operation was more extensive than that? And can you speak on some of the murders and deaths that have been associated with that ring?
Well, certainly. There are, and again, this is going to be difficult for your listeners. It's going to cause them a lot of cognitive dissonance. But you saw this in the Franklin scandal, and you also saw it in the current scandal that's breaking in the UK right now, is that some of these pedophiles are very sadistic, and they actually like to kill the children. And I know that that sounds completely incomprehensible to your listenership, but that is the case. It was the case in the Franklin scandal, and it's also the case in UK. We don't know whether or not Epstein, how sadistic he was. That information has yet to come out, but with the girls. But I've heard that some of the power brokers that were with Epstein were somewhat sadistic to these girls. But yes, in the UK, there have been murders that have been tied to the pedophile network that you're talking about.
Well, that is going to come out. Now, before going to the last segment here, regarding the crimes of the rich and powerful and their protection from our legal system because they are entitled to be above the law of the land, please speak a little about the gay escort service that operated under Henry Vincent's direction for many years in Washington and served many of the GOP and Washington elite. And did this also include pedophile? And then look at the GOP lobbyist who figures prominently in the sex ring. And he was also a key figure in the Franklin scandal that we've discussed on this program.
Yeah, sure. I'm having a book published that I co-authored with Henry Vincent. It'll be published in March. It's called Confessions of a DC Madam, The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail. And as I said earlier, with the Franklin scandal, the kids would be flown to Washington, D.C., and there was a house that was wired for audiovisual blackmail. The house was owned by a big shot lobbyist power broker named Craig Spence. And Vincent, the network of Spence and King, I mean, they provided you with anything. I mean, if you wanted children, they would provide you with children. But if you wanted like a young man in his 20s or a young woman in her 20s, you would be provided with that too. And so Henry dealt specifically with and King and Spence, Lawrence King and Craig Spence, and their blackmail operation. And it's really, his perspective is really interesting because he takes you right into a blackmail operation that's being run by a CIA operative, because Spence was definitely a CIA operative. And he also shows the tremendous amount of power that was used, because that was almost broken open, too. The Washington Times was reporting that Craig Spence's home was wired for audiovisual blackmail and that he was blackmailing people. And the Confessions of a DC Madam will take people into that world of power politics in Washington, D.C., and also blackmail. And it'll be unlike a lot of books. I think it'll be like the first book of its kind to actually take the reader inside a Washington, D.C. blackmail operation.
When you look at all the high-placed individuals who have been named as associates or clients of sexual and pedophile rings, we need to ask the question whether these individuals were always that way, or does it say something about rising to the pinnacles of power and affluence that has deleterious effects upon them? And we have no way of knowing whether Bill Clinton, Alan Dershowitz, and the British parliamentarians and others always had a pathological fondness for their proclivities, whatever they may be. Your thoughts on the relationship between power, wealth, influence, and the individual feeling of being superior and above the law to sexual conduct? And then here we have the most powerful man in the world, Bill Clinton, who couldn't be faithful to his wife, couldn't be honorable enough to the American people or to the people who elected him, and yet today he is praised and loved. What does that tell you about the cult of celebrity?
Well, Bill Clinton is, either people love Bill Clinton or they hate Bill Clinton. People are very polarized around Bill Clinton, but Bill Clinton is, our politicians have an interesting alchemy of arrogance and lust. And given that alchemy of arrogance and lust, I mean, they're alpha males. Most of our politicians are alpha males. And nothing makes a person, a smart person, stupid like arrogance or sexual drive. And if you combine those two, then you ultimately come up with very smart people doing really stupid things. And I think Bill Clinton epitomizes that. Elliot Spitzer, Mark Foley, I mean, the list can go on and on and on, where people thought that their arrogance and just all around blindness because of lust, just they thought that they were above the law. I mean, that happens, that's been going on forever. And sexual blackmail has been going on forever, too. I mean,
Nick,
so
let me intercede. When the day that Princess Di died in the car accident with Dodi, I was with his physician. He was a house guest. And he told me in a conversation later that night that this guy put secret cameras in every bedroom. And I said to him, well, what's the likelihood now that someone's going to have an awful lot of sexually explicit material that they could use for blackmail? And he said, you have no idea how common it is. Now we hear that Epstein may have put cameras in to his bedrooms.
No, Epstein absolutely had hidden cameras.
How do we know that? What proof do we have of that?
Because when the Palm Beach Police Department served a search warrant on Epstein's home, they found the hidden cameras.
So well, what would a man want with a hidden camera, except if he has powerful people to use that as a form of blackmail?
Yes, I mean, that's one thing where Epstein is, I mean, it's certainly conceivable that Epstein was blackmailing people. And actually, Virginia Roberts, the girl that is claiming that she was molested by Alan Dershowitz and also Prince Andrew, said that Epstein asked her questions in order to find, to glean blackmailable material from individuals that she was with. And then when you combine that fact that he had hidden cameras in his house, Epstein very well might have been a blackmail operation. And it's conceivable. Now, with the Franklin scandal, I traced the blackmail operation to Craig Spence, who was a CIA asset. Those connections have not been made with Epstein yet, that he's somehow working with intelligence. But someone went to bat for him big time to get him out of...
a lot of people went to bat for him. One person couldn't have done that.
Well, actually, I mean, someone at the very pinnacle of the Department of Justice could have ordered it and mandated it and would have been done.
Attorney General would never have sacrificed his political career or reputation unless he had an order from someone even more powerful. So I think we have to look at our entire system as being completely, totally corrupt.
I would agree with you with that.
Final thoughts. I just want to give one final thought here, and that is, here we have Jeffrey Epstein, a billionaire, connected with many of the most powerful people and wealthy people in the world, the ultimate elite. And he serves a tiny little bit of time in prison, doesn't have to stay there in the daytime, just goes back at 9 o'clock at night or whatever time it is, to a county jail. And the case against him was so blatant that there was little else the court could have do but convict him for something. And although his greater crimes and the extent of his pedophile operations were whitewashed, today in our justice system, we have no problem going after everyday citizens, locking them up, taking away their assets, locking them indefinitely for crimes such as the ones that we've been discussing. But if it's the head of a state, if it's a CEO, if it's the presidents of banks, multinational corporations, or famous international celebrities, they get a free pass and at most a slap on the wrist. So what does this say about the injustice and discrimination in our justice and court system today? A minute to you.
Well, as F. Scott Fitzgerald said, the rich are different than you and me. And what we see with Jeffrey Epstein, what we see with the Franklin scandal, what we see in what's happening in the UK now is that there's a different set of standards. And the thing is, every socioeconomic group has pedophiles. Every socioeconomic group, not just the rich, but there's plenty of pedophiles amongst lower socioeconomic groups. The big difference between a rich pedophile and a poor pedophile is that the rich pedophile can molest children with impunity. And until our society comes, you know, really grapples with that and looks at this situation, these power broker pedophile networks that I wrote about in the Franklin scandal that occurred with Jeffrey Epstein, that have occurred in the UK, that have occurred in Belgium and Portugal and other places, until the people of really come to terms with this, these pedophile networks are just going to keep rolling, and more kids are going to keep being destroyed by them.
Well, Nick, the good thing that you have done is you stayed focused as a top investigative reporter. You didn't take your eye off the issue. And so we thank you for doing all this work, even though the mainstream media didn't want to touch the Franklin scandal, because it was the story of power brokers and child abuse and betrayal and the Catholic Church.
And they don't want to touch the Gawker articles either.
Well, that's all right. The American public is learning about this, and people will listen to this program and learn also. We know that a lot more is going to be coming out, and we'll share that information. Thanks a lot, Nick Bryant.
Okay,
I'm
Gary
Knoll.
Thank you.
This is the Progressive Commentary Hour, and this was The Epidemic of Underage Sexual Escort Services to the Rich and Powerful. Thank you for listening.